Tommy Nelson continues his study on the Song of Solomon. This session is titled The Art of Conflict, Part 1. It's important to understand the context of this message, so at this time, we suggest you stop the cassette and take a few moments to read Chapter 5, verses 1 through 9.
All right. We have looked at attraction. We have looked at courtship, dating. We have looked last week at intimacy. Tonight, let's rumble. Let's fight. Let's see how it's done. In the Song of Solomon, Chapter 5, and we're going to be looking at two chapters. It's an eight-chapter book with seven events, and conflict gets two chapters. Conflict gets 25% of the book, which is probably prophetic of your marriage, and mine too, because sometimes conflict takes up about 25% of our marriage. Let me share something with you as we begin here. I'm thinking of the time, early 1980s, I'm in Oklahoma City doing a wedding there with my wife, staying in a motel. That morning I get up and I jog. It's hot and sticky. I get all sweaty running up and down the access road by the highway. I come in, take off my sweaty t-shirt, throw it into a paper bag where obviously you would keep sweaty stuff on a trip. Little did I know, my wife had the gown she wore to the wedding that was in that bag. And I, unbeknownst, threw my sweatshirt down. My wife saw me do this and instantly reacted. And she whomped me with her hand right on my spinal column, right in the middle of my back. She went, "Don't do that!" And she hit me, bam, just like that. And I turned, overcome, of course, totally irresponsible for my actions. And I turned and said, "Cut that out!" And I spoke harshly to my wife. And as soon as I said it, my wife is a very responsive person, and the tears leaped to her eyes. The problem was, I felt wronged. She felt wronged being yelled at. And after doing this wedding on holy matrimony, my wife and I got into the car and we drove from Oklahoma City to Texarkana, Texas. We drove 5 hours in total dead silence. Until finally, as we got there, one of us kind of felt some contrition and we got the thing worked out. The point is, all couples fight. Good couples fight clean. Bad couples fight dirty. Good couples press to a resolution. Bad couples press for a victory. Good couples, when they conflict, it exposes their character. A bad couple, when they conflict, it exposes their immaturity. All couples conflict. Let me give you a great verse on marriage. Proverbs. Where no oxen are, the manger is clean. But much increase comes by the strength of the ox. Isn't that the strangest verse you've ever heard? It sounds like one of them old Hakowi Indian sayings on F Troop that you used to say. Where no oxen are, the manger is clean. That's a fact. If you have no oxen in your barn, you have a clean manger. But much increase comes by the strength of the ox. You also don't get any work done. If you would like money, you're going to have to plant, and to plant, you're going to have to plow, you're going to have oxen. And if you have oxen, they're going to do what oxen do. They're going to stink your barn up. Now, your guy says, "I want money, I need crops, I need plowing with oxen, but I don't like what oxen do. I don't like what comes with oxen." If you want one, you've got to have the other. It's true of all of life. This is not a Burger King universe where you get it your way all the time. Yeah, I love children. I've got two. They're marvelous. However, you're going to have to conflict. I love Christians. I love the church. My greatest joy has been here. However, some of my deepest pain has been here. You'll never find a perfect church. I love marriage. However, you're going to conflict. You can't have everything the way you like it. No oxen, clean barn, no work. Work, smelly barn. If you want the joy of marriage, you're going to have some conflict. That's why there are three great stages in marriage. You go from the honeymoon, that means a sweet month. That's what it means. And then you go to what is called disillusionment. where all the illusion is gone. You thought you married Ozzie Nelson, you got Homer Simpson, all right? That's disillusionment. And you move from disillusionment into what is called commitment, to where you discover your mate, warts and all, and you commit yourself to loving them in a biblical manner. If you don't have conflict in your marriage, you're either a couple of people that are virgin-born and you have no sin nature. I doubt it. Or you might be people that simply are boring. You don't communicate. You got a maid married to a butler. And you just kind of perform functions, but you don't really communicate. Or it could be that you have one dominant person and one subdued person, and that's bad. You don't have peace. You just have a person that has surrendered and waved the flag and gone underground. Marriages without conflicts are not healthy marriages. There's a way to fight clean. There's a way to fight dirty. I'm going to show you this evening, this couple conflict, and I'm going to show you six different steps. The last stage of the conflict, they're going to compare them to two companies that are having a party. Their marriage is going to deepen, and it's going to take them into the next text in the most passionate text physically in the entire Bible. It deepens them. This is maybe the most important text you're ever going to learn on marriage. Watch this. Chapter 5, verse 2. I was asleep, the woman says, but my heart, meaning Solomon, was awake. A voice, my beloved, was knocking. Open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my perfect one. Now, what do you think that brother's thinking of? When a guy comes, in these days they slept in separate rooms, and when the fellow comes to her door and knocks, open up to me, my darling, my dove, my perfect one. I've heard a lot of commentaries, forget them. This fellow wants intimacy with his wife. And he says at the end of that verse, my head is drenched with dew and my locks with the damp of the night. He has been out working. He's been in a hard, cruel world. He's come in at night and he longs for the intimacy with his wife. And this is one of the greatest joys in the world, to be a man, to get out in a world that is hostile and to come in and lock the door and be in a quiet place, to lock the bedroom door and get under the sheets with your wife that can embrace you and love you. And I love to lay in the dark and talk to my mate in the deepest way that I can talk to her. There's nothing greater. This man longs for intimacy emotionally, physically, and always with his wife. He has worked so hard, and he needs her. Now, what do you think is going to happen? Now, in the dating relationship, let his left hand be under my head, his right hand embrace me. In courtship, she called her body the hills of Bether, called him a young stag. You saw last week the intimacy of marriage, the passion of it. This is going to have to be one of the most incredible. Let's look at it. What does the text say? Verse 3. I have taken off my dress. How can I put it on again? I have washed my feet. How can I dirty them again? In Hebrew, that means I have a headache. That means I don't care how hard you've worked. I don't care what you need. I ain't getting out of bed. I am more important than you. My wife has a little ditty on this. It goes, me, me, me. I love myself. I have my picture on my shelf. And she'll say that to me whenever I get selfish. And that's kind of what the woman needs sung to her right here. Now, the fact is, the guy has some emotional needs, some physical needs. This guy longs for his wife. She won't let him in the door. I ain't getting up to open the door. We got conflict. What would a lot of guys do? Hey, I was a king. You're working in a vineyard, all right? I took you. You were embarrassed about your body you couldn't take care of. I took you. I gave you the checkbook. You no count, woman. Watch this. Verse 4, my beloved extended his hand through the opening. You notice, fellows, he did not go in. He does not press it. He merely opens perhaps the door and slides his hand in. And then he slides his hand out because he did something. My feelings were aroused for him. I arose to open to my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, and my fingers with liquid myrrh on the handles of the bolt. The very thing that kept her from him, he put liquid myrrh on it. What that was in the Hebrew culture, it was a calling card. It's a Valentine's. And it means, I love you. What's the first thing you do when you conflict? When, not if, your mate hurts you. Number one, you do not react. And I use that term with all of the etymological precision that I can. You do not reenact what your mate did. Just because she did it, you don't have to do it. Paul put it like this. Never take your own revenge, beloved. He put it like this in Thessalonians. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Jacob's or Joseph's brothers came to him after their daddy died. They said, "Will you vow to us you will not take our lives?" And Jacob or Joseph said, "Am I in the place of God?" Meaning, it is not my obligation to mirror the actions of other people. My standard is God. I don't have to reciprocate without other people do. Your mother put it like this: two wrongs do not make a right. That is a threadbare, old, archaic, cliche, trite saying because it's been true forever. John the Baptist said, if all your friends jumped off a cliff, would you? It's in there somewhere, I'm convinced, because my mother would quote it. It means that I don't have to do what my mate does. You see, we get into this. This is where marital problems start, is in couples, like in tennis, rallying over the net back and forth when they get hurt. He yelled, she yells back. He throws a cushion, she throws the chair. She'll cuss his mother, she'll cuss his father, and it goes back. Listen, when you're hurt, there's something in you in the image of God like a tuning fork, and it goes off. And whenever you reciprocate in anger, you initially don't feel wrong. You feel right. You feel holy. You feel just. You feel nigh unto deity. You feel that you have weighed out the good-evil problem in the cosmos, and you have subdued it. But the fact is, you've taken a prerogative that is not yours. It's God's. You don't react. And here's what happens when you react. You can react hot or you can react cold. A hot reaction means that I return in kind, and then they come back and I come back, and one of two things happens. I'm going to totally disrupt my house. And that's where you have a house that is ridden with strife because two collide and one can't win. And now your kids are dying for the day they turn 18 that they can get out of that house. And some of you grew up in a house like this. Proverbs, better is a plate of vegetables in a house of quietness than a fattened ox in a house of strife. Your kids want to leave. And ultimately, you'll get one mate that'll subdue the other one. And that subdued mate will swallow it and remember it and harbor it until about 14 years into your marriage, and you come home one day and they're gone and the furniture's gone and you ain't got nothing but one of them little toilet rolls left. And they delight in hurting you and carving your liver. And I've seen it happen. You don't respond hot and you don't respond cold. Any of y'all grew up in houses where you had passive aggression? You didn't have conflict, but one of them turned the ice on the other one for about 10 days at a pop. And everybody had to walk on eggshells because mom and dad weren't getting along. And that's just as bad, if not worse. You don't react. I got to tell you, you might say it, well, how do you know if you've hurt your mate? You get what's called nonverbal communication. You'll see it. And you don't have to worry. And if you don't watch it, I got to be honest with you, my wife and I deal with conflict pretty well. But we get into nonverbal communication sometimes, and it can turn cold and it can get hot if you don't deal with it. My wife's a pro. I'm going to share with you my wife's nonverbal communication. If I'm sitting right here and I've hurt her, she's got a little technique. You got to be quick to catch it now. It goes like this. Did you catch it? I'll slow-mo it. What you got to do is you catch the eyes of the offender, and just when he looks at you, you close yours. And then you turn slightly. And then you open them again. And what you're saying is, you are not worthy to look upon. Sometimes you put a little motor unit in while you're walking, you'd like this. And you go out the door. I myself use a little better one. I got a little more vocal one. I kind of do with one of these jobs. Whenever she hurts me, I'll go. And then she'll come back if she thinks she's been wrong. And we'll kind of go back and forth and out. I'm like, yeah. And you sound like a couple of elk bugling if you've ever been. up in Banff or someplace. Or sometimes what I'll do is I'll read my Bible. You know what I'm saying? You got to read it in a certain way. You open it like this. Say, what are you doing, dear? I'm drawing strength from God to live in an alien world. My point is, you'll find different ways that you kind of stick it to your mate. I want to ask you a very penetrating question, singles. Are you this kind of person? Do y'all solve conflicts like this? Do y'all go through roommates like socks because you blow up? Do some of you girls stomp out and put the cold shoulder and freeze everybody out and pout? You're gonna be miserable to live with. Proverbs, a brother offended is harder to be won back than a strong city, and contentions are like bars of a castle. You hurt your wife, fellas, and yell at her, and you have sent shrapnel in her soul, and it's going to give scar tissue, and it's going to take you a while to win it back. Contentions are like bars of a castle, and she's not going to let you in quite so easily. You can't use the forgiveness of your mate as an excuse to hurt her, because you're going to wound her, and him also. You don't react. Secondly, what do? You respond to God. Solomon, she did you wrong. Why did you put myrrh on the handles of the bolt? Answer, because my standard of conduct is not my wife. It's God. And He says to love my wife. And that's what I'm going to do. No matter what she does. This is a quality that was seen in Jesus Christ in the most powerful scene of human history while they surrounded Him like bulls of Bashan. While being reviled, He did not revile in return. While suffering, He uttered no threats, but entrusted Himself to God who judges righteously. He said, Father, forgive them. Folks, if you're the kind of person that has the quality, we call it in sports, poise, where you maintain your pose, your composure, to where you listen to a higher voice in stress. It's called in character traits magnanimity, where you are great of spirit. The negative quality is called meanness, because it's the average response of pagan men. That's what the word mean means. It's what everybody else does. You respond to God. And fellas, let me put a word to y'all. This is so important in your future marriage. I don't care what they say about men and women being alike. Jesus said, God made them male and God made them female. When a man gets hurt, he gets offended, he'll get angry. But when you hurt your wife, they're different. Peter put it like this, husbands, live with your wives as unto knowledge, meaning don't be dumb. As with a weaker, not meaning lesser, but it means a weaker vessel like porcelain, like crystal, like china. You handle her delicately. Grant her honor as a fellow heir in the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Fellas, you can't do this with your wife. They are gentle creatures, and you hurt them deeply. I'll confess to you, when I hurt my wife, I physically can watch her. She has an expression. As soon as she gets hurt bad, she'll do this. And her eyes tear up, and I've hurt her. And when you do that, you shut down everything. You kneel. You give money. Atone. Slay a goat if you have to, all right? But you stop everything, and you go to your wife, and you ask her forgiveness. You don't hurt your wife. Listen, this is the way men and women are. Fellas, think about it. When you and I, males of the species, when we get close, how do we do it? I see you coming, and when we first meet, we're very cordial. How you doing, Tom Nelson? You? Yes, good to meet you. But after we get to know one another, how do men get close? We insult each other. Right? That's if you, it's kind of like two dogs, you know? I allow you to get in on my throat. And so I'll see Doug, you know, and I'll say, hey, you scrawny looking Doug, is that you, old man, you? I'll see Greg. I say, hey, Greg, you rub his head, you know, like this. Because we love each other. And when guys really get close, what do? You hit each other, right? Hey, dog, dummy, dead. Women ain't like that. When's the last time you seen two women in that parking lot going, hey, you skinny leg woman? Well, I ain't ugly. Right? Women don't do that. Men get kind of, we're kind of the harsher of the species. One of the great one-liners I've ever heard was at a Ranger game, seventh inning stretch, Arlington Stadium. Everybody's down in the bathroom. There's guys standing at the heads about nine deep, all just kind of moving forward, and I hear this voice, are we bonding? Great, that's the way men are, you know. Respond. Let me stop right here. Everybody with me? Number one, you do not react. That alienates your mate. Number two, you respond. Husbands, love your wives. Wives, revere your husbands. That's the voice from heaven that you have to listen to. Not the crowd noise of your soul. It's called spirituality. It's called maturity. It's called temperance. It's called self-control. There is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. How many of y'all grew up in homes that were so tense because you didn't know how the parent woke up that morning? There's one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword. Don't react. What's the next thing you do? Watch this. You go down to verse 6. I opened to my beloved had gone away and had gone. My heart went out to him as he spoke. I searched for him, but I didn't find him. I called for him, but he didn't answer. The watchmen who make the rounds of the city found me. Now they're the guardsmen of the city. They struck me and wounded me. The guardsmen of the walls took away my shawl from me. Would you turn back one page to chapter 3? On a day where she longed for her husband and their courtship. And in chapter 3, in verse 2, I must arise now and go about in the city, in the streets and squares. I must seek him whom my soul loves. I sought him but didn't find him. The watchmen who make the rounds of the city found me. I said, have you seen him whom my soul loves? Scarcely had I left them when I found him. When she was in fellowship with God, things tended to flow her way and she found her husband and the watchman helped her. But over here in chapter 5, when she had acted in selfishness and barred her husband from her room and not let him in to converse because of her needs, you notice there in verse 7, the watchmen who make the rounds of the city found me, they struck me, they wounded me. What's the next principle? Don't react, respond. Let God change them. Folks, this principle has made any kind of marriage that I have is right here. Because there's no command that I have in the Bible to sanctify my wife in the sense of changing her. I'm to teach her, to love her, to care for her, but I don't have to play the Holy Spirit to her. I communicate to her, I tell her my heart's deepest feelings, but I don't have to change her. Whenever you start trying to do this, you start manipulating your mate. You start bargaining with your mate and prostituting your mate. I'll do these things if you'll do this. That's not ministry, that's manipulation. Let God change them. My wife said to me, when you share this story, you got to share the orange juice story. I said, all right. Actually, what I said was, all right. I'll share it. Early on in my marriage, my wife's laying in the bed. I said, Teresa, get up, fix some breakfast. I'm kidding around with her. I've got this big, long metric stick, four-sided cubed metric stick with steel tines on the side. I pick it up and I strike what I think is a lump in the sheets. It is my wife's leg, and I hit her hard. Get up and fix me some breakfast. Crack! And I came right down. And I was horrified. Her eyes puddled up. She couldn't even yell. I immediately, in contrition, fled into the kitchen. I got the orange juice and popped the top. And when I did, it poured all down my front. And I've got this wet, sticky, cold orange juice all down me. My wife comes in and I turned away from her. I said, "You prayed for that." And she said, "Come here, sweetheart." And I turned and I hit my head on the corner of the cabinet. Boom. And I got blood running down here. The watchmen who make the rounds struck me, and they wounded me. God has a way of changing things. Don't you try to change your mate. Ladies, I get, when I do women's Q&As, and I do them a lot of times, the biggest question I get are sorry husband questions. My husband's like this. What do I do? And I ask the ladies, what are your options? Can you leave him? No, the Bible says not to do that. Can we kill him? And you see these ladies going, "Well, I'm not sure." I said, "No, you can't kill him." What can you do? Now, obviously, there's some scenarios of incest, abuse, ad infinitum. That's another sermon for another day. We're talking about normative marriage with a mate that hurts you at times. What do you do? Well, there's a way to communicate and there's a way not to, but ultimately, you got to let God change him. You got to be tough in your love. You got to be loving in how you communicate, but you got to let God change him. You could do what I forget who the country western singer was. It talked about he kept coming home drunk, and his wife, when he came home drunk one time, laid there, and she took the sheet and laid it back over him, took some thread and sewed it up all around him like a cocoon, and then took a broom handle and just beat him. Just beat him till he whimpered, and he couldn't get out. And beat him, and she'd go outside, she'd get something to eat, come back in, beat him some more. Now, that's what you'd like to do. And he made a great statement. He said, "You know, you'd think a grown man could get out of a sheet whipped up, but you can't." So that's an option. You just beat the guy. But you can't do that. My greatest story is Dr. James Dobson tells about a guy gets up with his wife in the morning. She says, "Hey, could you help me with this dress here? Zip the back of it." He's playing around with it, grabs a zipper. And he goes, zip, 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 zip. And what happens? It breaks. She had the dress dry cleaned that night, and it's all busted up that morning. He says, "I'm sorry." She leaves mad. She comes home, and when she comes home, 5:30, he's underneath the car. What does she do? She grabs his zipper and zip, 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 like that. And she laughed, and she went on in, walked inside the house, and there in the kitchen is her husband. True story. She said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "What do you mean, what am I doing here? It's my kitchen." "You're under the car." "I ain't under the car." "Well, who's under the car?" "It's a next door neighbor." He said, "The muffler was coming off." I asked him to fix the muffler. She said, "I grabbed this zipper." He said, "Oh, no." Now, here's the great part. To show you what anger does, they went outside, and this guy is laying just stock still. And what had happened is when she grabbed his zipper, he did what any man would have done. He sat straight up, bam! Knocked himself out. Now, that's a real far left story, but it don't get any better when you go trying to change your mate. All right? Are you with me? Learn it now. Incidentally, every time I teach this to couples, you know what they always say? They come up and say, "I wish I'd have learned that 20 years ago." Well, you're at the place of 20 years ago, most of you. You get to learn the thing now. I wish somebody had taught me like I'm teaching you from this book. Don't react. Respond to God in magnanimity. And you let God change him. Jesus was spoken to by Pilate. Pilate said, "Don't you know I have the authority to release you, and I have the authority to crucify you?" And he said to him, "You have no authority unless my Father in heaven gives it to you." And from that moment, Pilate sought how he might release him, because he recognized, "I'm under God." Girls, let me tell you the dirtiest trick my wife does. When she presses me for a decision and I go my way, she says, "Well, do what you want. You're under God's authority. He'll deal with you." Thanks a lot.